This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, chapters 5 and 6, An Excess of Phlegm and Draco's Detour. In these chapters, girls of our Gold and Silver Tree are not the biggest fan of Fleur Delacour.
No, they're being a bit
bitchy.
Bitchy, yes.
Patty, and
yes.
We will discuss how much of it is warranted or not. And Then chapter 6 is Draco up to some sneaky shit.
What is this kid up to? This blonde mystery man?
Yes, and it's been 2 weeks since we've recorded, because, again, this will be much later when it finally appears to the public, but we did not record last Monday because I was fighting the man at the Indiana State House protesting the Senate, you know, trying to pass Senate Bill 1 about super restricting abortion access, since now Roe versus Wade is not there to put them in place.
Yeah, and I guess tonight we're anxiously awaiting what happens in Kansas. So
Indiana currently, it passed in the Senate narrowly and is going on to the House. They're still debating it. And who knows what, you know. The only way it could not move forward into law is if some asshole Republicans thought that it wasn't, you know, demeaning enough to women and needed to be stricter. And then again, we'll deal with the big vote in Kansas and see. And if both of those states fall, then it's only Illinois to serve the entire Midwestern and Southern region. Nowhere in the South.
Well, no. Yeah, that's right.
Nowhere in the South.
Yikes.
Yeah. So that's where we're at, and we want to distract ourselves with Harry Potter.
Yes.
So, chapter 5, what were your preliminary thoughts, impressions?
I'm trying to formulate my thoughts and impressions, because there wasn't anything, like, we kind of knew Fleur Delacour was coming back, but in this capacity, you know, okay, it makes sense. Nothing really rocked my world in this chapter. I was a little disappointed with my Weasley girls and Miss Granger, but we can get to that. And of course, Gibbous might be saying hi. Of course. He does not talk to me all day, and here he is.
Of course. Yep. And so first we begin by Dumbledore dropping off Harry at the Burrow. Harry's early. I thought you wouldn't be here till morning. We were lucky, said Dumbledore. Slughorn proved much more persuasive than I had expected. And so Mrs. Weasley is not alone in the kitchen in the middle of the night. Tonks is there. So what were your feelings when you saw and the description in regards to Tonks and this little interaction?
I mean, quite the other side of how we initially met her, which was very kind of vibrant, and she's got like pink hair, and she seems very kind of like full of life. And in this instance, she's kind of, you know, they talk about her being less than colorful, kind of having mousy brown hair, looking kind of downtrodden. Mm-hmm. And I don't, you know, later it's mentioned her connection with Sirius, but I feel like there's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm. Put a pin in that. We will return to it later.
I think they were in love. Okay.
Even though they were cousins?
Sure. You know, I keep matching up cousins in this. I just love love so much. Okay, maybe
well,
not.
Well, he's her first cousin once removed because she's the daughter of Sirius's first cousin.
Okay. Well, maybe they weren't in love, but something bigger is going on. So.
And then, all right. So Tonks, yeah, downtrodden. You know, Molly's like, oh, please stay or come to dinner this weekend. Mad-Eye and Remus are coming. She's like, nope, I'm out. And she quickly hurries out the door and disapparates.
So we still don't know what, I mean, we're really not really clear on what's going on with her, but something definitely is.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Molly Weasley in her typical fashion. You can cough. It's not inspired.
I don't want to cough in the thing. I'm so sorry. I'm sure our listeners would be like, oh my gosh. Can you repeat that since I was
coughing? No, it's just in typical Molly Weasley fashion, she settles Harry at the table and gives him some onion soup and bread, which sounds really appetizing when I read it today. And I'm just like, you know what? That sounds really good. Like all I had today, because I was too lazy to cook. I had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, not even on normal like white bread, but like pita bread.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And still very good. And then I had super healthy, good job, Amy, just a salad of like cucumbers, tomatoes, onions, olives, and avocados, just all diced up, no lettuce, and then drizzled some of that, some like garlic fig balsamic on it.
That sounds really good, actually.
It is a really nice salad, but yeah, just some hearty onion soup sounded really good today.
Yeah, that does, even though, I mean, it's hot as hell here, but it did sound very good, this whole situation. And, you know, I'm always anxious for fall. As soon as, like, the 4th of July is over, it needs to be fall. So this just put me in the fall spirit, too.
Yep. And so Mrs. Weasley is like, oh, yeah, like, we knew Slughorn. He used to teach us. Like, that's how old Slughorn is, because, you know, maybe not older, but he's at least he may be Dumbledore's age in terms of, you know, how old they are. They probably were both born in like the 19th century.
Oh my. All right. Yeah,
they're probably way well past 100. Anyway. So she's just like, yeah, he likes to collect favorites and he never had any interest in Arthur and, you know, didn't see him as, you know, very promising or ambitious, but. And she's like, that goes to show you, even Slughorn makes mistakes. I don't know whether Ron told you in any of his letters. It's only just happened, but Arthur's been promoted.
Woo! Maybe some little easier times for the Weasleys we can help.
Yes, because before he was like the head of the misuse of Muggle artifacts, which like literally had maybe like one or two others.
Yeah.
Because again, the notion of taking care of Muggles is so like a low priority beyond the just keeping the secret, like actual like treatment of them is not very highly prioritized.
Yeah.
But now he is the head of the Office for the Detection and Confiscation of Counterfeit Defensive Spells and Protective Objects, which I looked on this in a new light, you know, post-COVID, or at least post, you know, extreme lockdown COVID.
Yeah.
Because it's such human nature that when something, you know, disastrous happens, we're so desperate for protection that we cling to things that naturally don't make sense because we just want some semblance of hope. And so this whole thing where basically Arthur's job is, you know, trying to track down and protect people from all these scammers who are exploiting everyone's fear of, you know, the Dark Arts and, you know, saying these amulets or anything can, all these potions can like protect you when in reality they can't. So that just made me think of all the horrible, like, you know, fake cures that showed up, you know, people drinking chemical cleaning products to like protect from COVID, and just, it's like, again, just very human nature. Again, it's one thing to think like, oh, like super like ancient like Chinese medicine, or like super like the hippie sort of anti-vaxxers, that's one thing, but it's like to directly drink a cleaning product.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have a lot of thoughts. I spent a lot of time talking to people about, but this specifically for animals, about alternative medicine and things like that. So, I mean, I'm not going to state an opinion either way on that. But it did remind me, too, of the chemical, like consuming chemicals did not make sense to me. I'll just say the alternative medicine stuff makes sense to me, but this, like, oh, let's take something that's used for horses, like dosage. Just, let's just think about dosage and weight. Like, I feel like some people just don't, they are looking for a magic pill when, what
there is, like, there is a magic pill. There was a magic pill. There was a magic vaccine, but why people want everything else under the sun except that.
Right, because, yeah.
Because that one was sanctioned by the government, and the government, again, not that we don't have problems, but it's against their interest that if they no longer have a population to control because everyone dies.
Yeah, and vaccine developed under D. Trumps, so it will never make sense to me, but here we are today, and we are still dealing with this shit. So yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Anyway, so definitely, you know, it seemed like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Good for Mr. Weasley, but definitely connected with it more and be like, yeah, this definitely is something that happens when crisis arises because people are desperate for protection or some sense of control and security. And so, yeah, so that's what Mr. Weasley does now, trying to protect people from the scammers who want to exploit this, you know, tempestuous time.
Good job, Mr. Weasley.
Yep. And so Arthur comes home and it's like they exchange their passwords or their passphrases.
A little awkward.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Weasley's, his answer, it's like, what's your dearest ambition? To find out how airplanes stay up.
Me too. That's what I thought. I was like, I know the information's out there, but yeah. Anyway, I feel you, Mr. Weasley.
My husband needs to know that too, because then he's gotten better. He's not the biggest fan of flying. And he's like, you're not like in control, like you're not standing on anything. And I'm like, you're standing on the fundamentals of astrophysics. And, you know, and statistically, you have more chance of dying in a car.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, and so airplanes aside, and then Arthur asks his question, what do you like me to call you when we're alone together?
Oh my god, how awkward. I cringed a little reading it, so.
Yeah, mollywobbles, a play on words from, I don't think it's used that much in the US, but the collywobbles.
Oh, okay, what does that mean?
I think it means, need to ask Nat, collywobbles kind of means like, you know, like the shivers or oh. Shivers not as in sickness, but like scared. It's like, I think gives me the creeps. I think.
Oh, okay.
Maybe, again, I apologize if we have any UK listeners. I should know better because my other co-host is, you know, lives in the UK. But I apologize. I'm a dumb American who has been spoon-fed everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not a phrase we use here, so, you know, it's all good.
So, Arthur finally comes in, says hi to Harry, and a few exchanges, and then what do we got? We find out that Fred and George do not live at the borough anymore. They live in a little flat above their shop in Diagon Alley, and they are being quite prosperous.
Good for them. Molly even kind of eats her words here. She was like, you know, well.
Yeah, they're making money, which again, that whole, whether it's entrepreneurial or more creative, like your parents so desperately want you to, you know, take the tried and true path so they don't have to worry about anything. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad they proved her wrong.
Sorry. Not that my parents are listening to this. They listen to like the first few episodes to indulge me, but they're not big Harry Potter, you know, they're not Potterhead by any means. Yeah. So they're not going to listen. They're not going to hear this, but again, like, so, like, not in a trying to be mean, but suppressing, like, I know you want to write your novel, I know you want to write your novel, but you have other important things to do. Yeah. And now that I'm, at a point where it's like, oh, I got the side hustle, like, writing, knowing, and they know how frustrated I am with my day job. And they're like, oh, that's good. You need to do something that you enjoy. And I'm like, you're saying this 15 years later.
I know. I kind of grew up in a little opposite, like, what do you like to do? And then unfortunately, like, you need a balance. I feel like you need a little bit of balance.
Again, I thought I was creating a balance with not doing math and science, but doing like languages, not just easy languages, but very critical languages. But even that, it's like, no, that's not valued in society. Or, yeah. You know, it made me avoid abject poverty, but can it help me get ahead? At least not in our current highly inflated society.
I mean, shoot, I would have not listened to that teacher that told me girls aren't good at science if I would have known.
In terms of feminist stuff, I mean, I keep going to that story because you're only a little bit older than me. And the fact that someone in like the 90s still said that to you.
I know. It is obviously scarred me for life. So, but yeah, it is, she was not a very happy person. I learned that later. She was fine later. So God knows what she would have said to me after her divorce. So I don't know.
So Harry, totters on up and is to Fred and George's room. And I never really thought about the description of Fred and George's room, but basically it's like, it smells like gunpowder and like using as a warehouse. So just like, again, just all their experimentation has been in this room and just like, who knows what sort of what sort of minefield is in those boxes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I would ask them to open them.
Well, Hermione gets a taste of it.
Yes, she does. Yes, she does.
So Harry, you know, goes to sleep. And is rudely awakened by Ron. He's like, what's going on?
That's funny. Yeah, he's so excited he's there.
Yeah, Ron's happy, of course, that he's there. Hermione is, have you ever been in the situation where it's like, again, something bad has happened, whether it's a death or like, again, something, and, you know, the people around you, it's like they're waiting for you to burst into tears, like, or you know something. Yeah. Like they're being weird, like basically Hermione's being weird. She's waiting for something, to like waiting for Harry to have a meltdown, and he's not.
Yeah, you know, I since we're talking family dynamics, mine sometimes do a pretty good job of just completely pretending it didn't happen. So but the cautious kind of approach, like, are you okay? Which has kind of led me to be a person that, I think recently of when my cat died, I was just kind of like, all right, here's what happened. Cause I don't have a problem showing it to me. That's just like crying. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Cancer. We cry all the time and it's fine. But yes, I do know the experience of like people kind of handling you delicately.
Yeah. Which I understand not wanting to like bring up the subject, but they just bring up the subject anyway by like being so weird about it.
That's the reason I usually kind of just put it out there. It comes up and you may as well grab the bull by the horns, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, so I was just, you know, either you can mention it and then the person can like shut it down if they want, or, you know, be like, talk about it. But yeah, either one. Yeah. Anyway. So let's see. They were, Ron's like, what were you doing with Dumbledore? And I'm like, nothing. And Harry's like, not that exciting, just convincing this teacher to come out of retirement. And so, and then they're talking about this, and then Ginny comes up.
Ooh, Ginny. Harry thinks she's like talking smack about Mrs. Weasley.
Yeah, and even Hermione, and thinking Hermione's doing it too, and then, you know, we all know you can't get enough of her, and Harry's like, this seemed like an odd comment to make about Ron's mother, and he's like, and then, who are you, and then the door comes in, and it is Fleur Delacour.
Is she part siren, or is
Yes, okay, she was. The siren creatures in this world are called Vila.
Yes.
Yes. And her grandmother was a full-blooded one, which means she is a quarter siren thingy.
Okay.
So there is a like physiological component to this.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So she is, she's late. She has Harry's breakfast tray and she's like, Harry, she said in a throaty voice, it has been too long. Oh, I get to do my ridiculous French accent now.
Go for it.
There was no need to bring up the tray. It was no trouble. I have been longing to see him. You remember my sister, Gabrielle. She never stops talking about Harry Potter. She will be delighted to see you again. So, and then we find out Fleur is there. Like, Fleur has been in the UK for like a year or so. She took a job at Gringotts. And there, it was slightly hinted at that maybe Fleur and Bill were like hanging out. And it's finally comes to fruition. And it's like, and Fleur announces, Bill and I are going to be married.
Bill is like the cool brother, right?
Yeah, with like the fang earring and like,
yeah. Okay. Well, good
for you. He's like the curse breaker, which is kind of the equivalent of like being an Indiana Jones, like going into temples to get, you know, gold.
Oh, okay. Okay. So he's
kind of... He's not doing it for like academic purposes. He's doing it like for the bank, for the goblins to get gold.
Well, then that's interesting, Mr. Bill Weasley. But okay, so he has hooked up with this lovely Fleur, or we find out some people don't think she's that lovely.
Yeah, and so Fleur is like, you know, see you around, Harry, and she leaves, and Ginny's like, Mom hates her.
I don't know. This is all very, like, this all felt very much like hanging out with my aunts in my very southern, you know, sweet to your face, needles behind your back.
Yeah, so in terms of, you know, the limited capacities in which we've seen Fleur through Harry's perspective, substantially in, you know, particularly in Goblet of Fire, Fleur's persona, her personality, is she the type of woman who would, like, piss you off, or at least piss off a younger version of your... of yourself, you know? Me personally, I don't think I would. First off, because I blended very well in France, and before I started talking and clearly had an accent, they thought I was French, so it's like I wouldn't see like, oh, the French woman as, you know, the pretty French woman as threatening, because I can blend in that culture. So like that wouldn't annoy me. And you know, is this purely, again, trying to portray, is like, are her interests truly so superficial, or is it the typical Hermione and Ginny dealing with, again, what we were discussing, sexism in the 90s of, oh, we're trying to distance ourselves from being like super feminine women. We're not like those girls, even though who knows what, you know, masculine badass interest, you know, Fleur has besides just being like pretty.
Yeah. I mean, that wouldn't bother me at all for many reasons, but like her being kind of this stunning woman, for many reasons I would be okay with it. But there was definitely, I think, in the 90s, a, like, if you were kind of like a, you know, delicate, you're the pitting women against each other was like the cool thing to do back in the day. And still is a little bit. So this is just kind of like, it feels a little cliched. And I would rather read stories where there's kind of unity among the women. And I feel like, especially in the times now, like, let's try to support each other. We're not, like, making women competition for men's affection is just so dated.
Yeah. I never thought about it this way, but in terms of, you know, the snobbery that people seem to attach with Fleur, I personally tend to think it's more perceived. It's not an actuality.
Yeah.
Or if it is an actuality, it's something that, if it is an actuality, you know, people put it on Fleur and she just like feeds into it because it's like, okay, this is what you think of me. This is what you're going to get.
That's an interesting hand that some people play. Like, you think I'm this, so I'm going to lean into it. So just because...
And I don't know, I just thought about, you know, there isn't much to do here unless you like cooking and chicken. So I wonder if there's a sort of socioeconomic element where they think that Fleur is looking down on the Weasleys because of their, you know, lack of high socioeconomic status. Like, we don't know exactly what Fleur's background, you know, socioeconomically is in France, but it's just a stereotype that she's French and therefore she's super fancy schmancy.
Yeah, I kind of got the vibe that I think that's probably the best like interpretation. I kind of got the vibe she had some money and like she might just be, you know, like it's pretty homey. It's, I guess, like to, you know, growing up in rural America, that mm-hmm. feel like it was kind of like I could empathize there. There wasn't a lot to do. And especially if you come from a place like I didn't have that experience really other than visiting. You come from a place that's got like a lot going on and then you're in a place where there's not a lot going on.
Yeah, which can't blame her. Even when I was a kid, you know, in rural Oregon, in the southern part, which was very conservative, it wasn't like the notion of being in a small town. It was the notion of if it's a small town and the people share my values, great. You know, but it was the sense of all this nature and all this beauty and that people say, oh, you know, why don't you like Oregon? It's so beautiful. And I'm like, I'm not disputing that the nature is beautiful, but all these, you know, rednecks ruin it because there's no one to talk to who shares my values and who I would think even if rural America, our use of technology makes it that everyone's connected. So to me, there's no excuse for them to be this backward anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. And that's something to think about that this is during a time where there was less access. So you're kind of, I don't know, man, Fleur might be being a little judgy, but I think the people around her are being a little more judgmental of her.
Yeah, I think if Fleur is like being judgmental, it's because she already got really negative vibes and it's like, okay, you know, and then, you know, putting herself like, okay, you guys think, you know, you're so much like better or, you know, than me, fine.
Right. I agree.
So anyway, so that's where we're at. And we find out, you know, Mrs. Weasley explaining, like, it was typical for people to, like, get married very quickly the last time there was war because people thought they would be dead, you know, tomorrow's not promised, people getting eloping, and Ginny says, including you and Dad.
Ooh.
And Miss Molly's like, yes, well, your father and I were made for each other. What was the point in waiting? And whereas Bill and Fleur, well, what do they really have in common? He's a hardworking, down-to-earth sort of person, whereas she's, again, saying that, you know, Bill is a very, quote-unquote, genuine person and who isn't very presumptuous or, you know, pretentious, but in their minds, Fleur is. And so to them, they don't think there's any foundation for this relationship beyond, like, Bill wanting to use her as a trophy.
Yeah, right.
And on top of all of this, you know, Ginny is like, Mom's going to try and stop it. She keeps inviting Tonks for dinner, thinking Bill will go for Tonks instead.
I think she will be sorely disappointed, but, you know, whatever. Bill seems to know what he wants, I guess.
And, you know, when they're, like, criticizing Fleur and, like, you know, comparing Tonks, and Hermione's like, and she's more intelligent. She's an Auris at Hermione. And Harry is like, Fleur's not stupid. She was good enough to enter the Triwizard Tournament. Which, you know what? Good for Harry.
Right. But of course, they kind of are like, oh, you're going to offend her. You know,
yeah, well, like they, again, they interpret it as he's just as ensnared by, you know, again, Fleur's abilities, you know, Siren-esque abilities as Ron.
Which is sexist on their part.
Yeah. And all this reference to Tonks, and Ron's like, she hasn't been much of a laugh lately. Every time I've seen her, she's looked more like Moaning Myrtle.
Oh, sick burn.
Sick burn. And again, Ron giving into a lot of sexism that women exist to be like Fleur, to be dainty and, you know, aesthetically pleasing. And the fact that Tonks is not her usual self, it's like, oh, that's really sad. I'm really worried about her. It's just like she's not being happy and go lucky, which is convenient to my life.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's it's hard to be a woman that is not that way. I feel like I lived that life. So.
And Hermione's like, that's not fair. She still hasn't gotten over what happened. I mean, you know, he was her cousin. So again, you're right. Shipping cousins.
Yeah. So let's like remove the romance thing. I don't know. Something's going on. Maybe it's not romantic.
And we find out that it seems that Tonks has a lot of survival guilt about Sirius because she was battling Bellatrix specifically before he was. And that if she had not, had she been able to overpower Bellatrix, because as we, in the battle, like she just falls on, is totally unconscious, and she's in St. Mungo's for a little bit. So like she, you know, basically lost her, you know, duel to Bellatrix, even though she didn't die. And so she feels that if she could have beaten Bellatrix, that, you know, Sirius wouldn't have been in a position to be murdered by her.
Yeah, I mean, so the survivor's guilt thing is very real. So I...
Mm-hmm. And Hermione's like, I know Lupin's tried to talk her around, but she's still really down. And we kind of learn that basically her metamorphosis ability, it's natural. Like, she didn't have to train for it. She was born with it. But clearly it's heavily dictated by emotion. And which kind of explaining why we saw her with maybe what I guess maybe genetically is her natural hair color from her parents. You know, the mousy brown hair and not her typical like bubblegum pink.
Well, that's too bad, Tonks. I hope she feels better progressively through it, but I'm sure it's not going to happen instantaneously.
Mm-hmm. And Miss Weasley comes back and is like, Ginny, come and help me with the lunch. And she's like, I'm talking now. And she's like, she only wants me there so she doesn't have to be alone with Flem, said Ginny. She swung her long hair around in a very good imitation of Fleur and pranced around the room with her arms held aloft like a ballerina.
This is not a good look for these people. I just don't like this stuff. I think it's annoying. I think I hate when women are mean to each other. It's just, it's just annoying.
Yeah. My sister had to deal with a lot of that. She did two postdocs, but there was one postdoc who forget which wanted which pharmaceutical company, but yeah, like the few women in positions of power did nothing to help the younger women. And of course, that is more commonplace than people really want to admit.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then what else we got? We finally get to the prophecy.
Yeah.
Where it's like, nobody knows what it said. It got smashed. And Harry finally reveals that for once, the prophet is correct. That I am, in essence, the chosen one, because the prophecy said neither can live while the other survived. And during this, Hermione gets punched in the eye by Fred and George's telescope.
Yeah, and it leaves quite the bruise.
Yeah, it's like a huge, brilliantly purple black eye.
Yikes.
And Hermione's like, oh, Harry, are you scared? Not as much as I was. When I first heard it, I was. But it seems now as though I always knew I'd have to face him in the end.
Yeah, like I think when we talked about this, I'm like, it's not really surprising to anybody. I don't think even to him.
Mm-hmm. And also tells them, oh, and Dumbledore's going to be giving me lessons. And then it comes out, when are we going to get our OWL results? And Harry's like, I think we might be getting them today, according to what Dumbledore said.
Oh, man, the OWLs. And then Hermione starts, like, freaking out.
Freaking out and running downstairs and hand-wringing so much, all sorts of, yeah. So, again, it's one thing to think that maybe you didn't get as high as you wanted, or, you know, at least across, you know, the spectrum. But Hermione's thinking, like, I failed everything. Again, just the notion of, you know, those people who are so anxious, like no amount of external validation, you know, will soothe that sort of self-doubt.
I mean, I
said that she still deals with that at 16, you know, as much as she's been, you know, saving these boys' asses.
I was going to be like, chill, Hermione, but like, honestly, I am that anxiety riddled. So I would be like, there's something happened where I can doomsday me. It happens quite often, but you know, they do make potions for helping with some of that.
I don't know. Cause for me, I interpret this more as a general, like self-doubt of probably heavily influenced by the prejudices against Muggleborns in this society. So I think of it as being like more general, like, but for me, I would feel this way specifically because I'm just not a good test taker. Like, I know I'm smart and I get pissed off with standardized tests because I know it's a very artificial environment that does not reflect what I can do with whatever skill or knowledge in the real world.
Right. also a little misogynistic, I guess, and very much directed to a very specific part of the population.
Yep. So they finally get them all. All the owls arrive, and we get Harry's results. You didn't care?
I mean, it was fine. I had to read the passing grades again because I'm like, oh, that sounds really bad, but actually it's really good. And I think we talked about this a while ago. This is kind of similar to how things work in the UK. And that, yeah, I think, kind of broke it down for us a little bit.
Yeah. And there was this question of, like, last book, they were explaining what the grades were when they were taking the test. And Fred and George were like, oh, don't forget, one of the failing grades is T. And there's and Hermione's like, T, what does T stand for? Troll. And they literally didn't know if Fred and George were joking or not. And so now, yeah, we know that that is actually an official grade
there, which is insulting to trolls, but that's okay. But I mean, was Harry going to pass potions? I guess he did. Okay.
He did pass potions. In fact, he did very well in potions. It's only because Snape is so crazy that he only accepts those with O's. Right. Like, you know, it's one thing maybe to not accept someone with just an acceptable, but which again, really discriminatory. And it's like, so it's left to the professor to be to the discretion of why isn't this standardized that, okay, if you get an E, you can be in the class, or if you got an A, or if it's across the board, if you got an O, you can be at this level. But no, they just let Snape do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah. To be continued as to why. But so he just kind of messed up the history of magic. And what was the other one?
Divination. And even astronomy, he even passed, even though during that exam, they saw Hagrid, you know, Umbridge try to arrest Hagrid.
Yeah. Man. Well, and Hermione obviously did very well, with the exception of, like, what does it say? She got one exceeds expectations at Defense Against the Dark Arts. I was thinking, like, of course, if anybody should get an outstanding in Defense Against the Dark Arts, like, it should be Harry Potter.
Like, I think it's the point that this is the one thing that Harry is better at her that. Not even so much in terms of pure, like, the subject, but more just, again, the nature of thinking on your feet, whereas Hermione's much more the planner.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel you, girl.
Yep.
Yeah, well, good for them. I'm glad they got their test results back and nobody... I thought it was interesting that nobody was, like, super upset about the failing grades, as I thought they would be.
Yeah. Again, I guess it's just the point of, like, they didn't fail any of, like, what they considered, like, they didn't want to pursue history of magic or divination anyway, so it's just like, okay, whatever.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, was it? And then we end with, you know, Harry just having that little tinge of regret because Snape is such a stickler for needing an O. He cannot continue in potions, and therefore he can no longer pursue being an Auror.
Yeah, that sucks. I mean, just because one guy's an ass.
Yeah, one guy's an ass. But again, the public school system, again, sometimes lets this happen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then we move on to chapter 6, Draco's Detour. Here we start off with, again, just happy, you know, happy, nice, you know, few weeks with the Weasleys playing on broomsticks in the orchard. Oh, la-di-la-di-da.
That is what, I mean, I think when I said at the beginning of the chapter, when you asked me what I thought, it's like everything is so, like, flat. I mean, in this chapter, it gets a little more exciting. But, like, so... usually we know what that means in Harry Potter. So then everything's going to go berserk here pretty quick. So anyway.
So.
Like now.
Yeah. So this happy little utopia Harry's living in is sometimes punctured because very often certain order members come in and deliver bad news, such as the ice cream parlor guy, Florian Fortescue, has been dragged off.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor guy. Yep.
And not only that, the wand maker is now gone, Ollivander.
Yeah, that's big trouble, which I guess they're like, when you think about it outside of, like, I'm going to take a pause. The poll results are coming in, and it's 73% no and 26% yes. So
Kansas is safe now?
Well, only 4% have been coming in, but that's actually very much less close than that is very strong no early on, which I wasn't expecting. So let's hope it keeps it that way.
Okay, for now, okay. Hopefully that stays. Hopefully that's not just like a certain like county that's blue or like shit like that. I'm just so paranoid because I stayed up with, 2016, the Trump election.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And it's just what the fuck?
I'm not going to be too hopeful, but for early on, that's not bad. And I won't look at it too much, but I did want to just tell you that. Yeah. So maybe there's some hope. Anyway,
okay, yeah,
back to this.
Yeah, and now returning to our normal Harry Potter programming. So,
wand maker, losing wand your best is wand maker is not good news. It's like losing your best swordsmith or something.
Yeah, some blacksmith, whatever. And unlike Florian, who it seems he was very much kidnapped and his place was ransacked, Ollivander just seems to have vanished. There doesn't appear to be any sort of sign of a struggle.
Yeah, so what does that mean? Does that mean he ran off or he was taken by the...
Was he taken? Did he put himself into hiding like Slughorn did? Is he going off doing some secret magical research shit like Gandalf in The Hobbit? I don't know.
We don't know, man. Let's hope it's a good thing, though. Let's hope he's not going to the dark side.
Yep, so... And we find out that, Harry has been made Quidditch captain.
Yeah. So everybody's psyched because he has the same privileges as the prefects do. Now.
Yeah. So that he can use their special bathroom now, which he already did, trying to figure out his egg clue in Goblet of Fire.
Right.
Yep. And so then we've got, it's not just Ollivander, Florian, Igor Karkaroff is now dead.
Yeah, that's a big, because that was the Durmstrang's headmaster, right?
Yeah, he was the headmaster, and he, for a long time, that's the one Snape was talking to when they felt their dart marks getting more distinct, and she's like, flee then, run away, I will make your excuses, I'm going to stay here. So we knew that Igor Karkaroff had run, but now it's finally confirmed that he is now dead. And Remus makes the point of that's actually quite impressive that he could stay alive that long. Even Sirius's brother only managed for a few days.
Yeah, dark times.
Mm-hmm. But then ultimately they go up to Diagon Alley. Arthur is not a pariah in the Ministry anymore, and they give him fancy cars for protection. And then they're going to get extra protection in Diagon Alley.
So we do get to Diagon Alley, which looks very different than it had once upon a time.
Yes, it used to be, so very happy and boisterous and lively. And now it's just people just doing their shop, just doing, doing the task, get in, get out. Going talking. To
the grocery store during COVID pandemic, yes.
Yeah, just get in, get out. Don't talk to anyone.
Right.
Yeah, don't interact with anyone. And so, yeah, that is the whole vibe. But at least their party is joined by the lovable Hagrid.
Yes, thank goodness. And, oh gosh, I forgot his name. Not Buckbeak. It's
Witherwings now?
I almost called him Wobblewings. Yes,
Witherwings. From Molly Wobbles.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and Witherwings.
Mm-hmm. And so they go in and... And then we get a very distinct example of, what Arthur deals with, because there's this really sketchy guy. He's selling these amulets, and it's one for your little girl, madam, he called as they pass, leering at Ginny, protect her pretty neck.
Gross. Chill, dude.
Yeah. And so ultimately it's decided that they're going to split up. So that everyone who needs the robes can go to Madame Malkin's, and then the rest of the group goes to Flourish and Blotts to get the books.
So kind of yeah, making this a little, usually like it's a whole event and we like talk to our friends and we eat ice cream and we freaking, it's a whole day. I mean, I remember that scene with, you know, Harry just like chilling and kind of like loving life. This is not the situation today. It's like,
no, it's trying to get everything done as soon as possible.
Right.
Which, and so they go into Madame Malkin's, not with Hagrid, because Hagrid is keeping guard outside. And who do they bump into?
Blech, Draco.
Draco and his mother, Narcissa.
Yeah.
Which, because literally Harry has seen Narcissa in the Quidditch Cup. I didn't hear her speak. Like, this is the first time he's, like, you know, interacting with her in any substantial way.
Yeah, this is kind of the most color we get on that character from so far. We've heard her name many times, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Draco's just like, if you're wondering what the smell is, Mother and Mudblood just walked in.
Freaking never stops, does he? This little.
Which, brat. I don't think there's any need for language like that. You know, again, this is coming from, again, the perspective of, you know, the 2020s. George Floyd, like, it's not enough to not be racist. You need to be anti-racist. And so, right. You know, for me, if someone was so blatantly, again, if someone so blatantly said the N-word, like, I would expect an employee or a manager to just tell that customer, get the F out.
Yeah. Yeah. I would hope so as well.
Like, not even try to, like, pacify them in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. I had an incident recently where something like that happened. And I usually am one of those people that I'm so stunned that I don't know what to say. And yes, it wasn't in a place of business, but I won't go into detail. But yes, I agree. You should be actively anti-racist.
Yeah, and I don't want to dismiss, because it's like when you get sexually harassed, you're just so stunned, and so you don't always respond in the way you know you want. Right. You want to, but for at least like a manager or an employee, like someone who has some power within that very specific physical space, you know, just get out.
Right. Right. Exactly. Agreed. Agreed.
And they've already drawn their wands on Malfoy, and Narcissus like, put those away. If you attack my son, I ensure that's the last thing you ever do. And it's like, really going to get a few Death Eater pals do us in, are you?
I mean, yeah, Sassy Harry. He's like sassing her, but like her husband's a freaking Death Eater. So
like her husband is in Azkaban right now.
Right. Yeah. So
it's like, and then she's just like, I see that being Dumbledore's favorite has given you a false sense of security, Harry Potter, but Dumbledore won't always be there to protect you.
Geez, I guess, you know, apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So she's kind of a pill too.
Yeah. And typically the biggest bullies can't take their own SHIT. Because it's like, you know, Draco has said so many things about Harry's parents and especially Harry's mother.
Yeah.
To the point that Harry started to physically punch him and got banished from the Quidditch team last book. Like, even doesn't even say something. Is like, it's not even directly to her. Why not have a go? They might be able to find you a double cell with your loser of a husband, which, again, her husband's an Azkaban.
Sorry, it's just, like, so intense that they're...
Yeah, and Malfoy's, Draco's like, don't you dare talk to my mother like that. And it's like, you've said so much about Harry's dead mother.
This is, I am a sensitive person. I don't dish it because I can't take it. So know yourself or be an ass like Draco.
Mm-hmm. So finally, they're just like, oh, now that we know that the riffraff that, you know, shops here, we're not going to shop here anymore. We'll do better at Twilfit and Tattings. It's like the Karen, you just lost a loyal customer, and the clerk is like, I don't care.
Right, right. Like, GTFO.
It's like, good, I'll never have to deal with you again. It's like, there was one meme where it's like, you've lost a customer, I'll never come here again. And each cashier or attendant waiter is like, you know, the thought bubble, I don't care, I don't care, I don't care.
Right, right, yeah. I guess in this, the only difference in this situation, it's this person's business, right? But I feel like Harry Potter's name holds more sway than the freaking Malfoy's, especially since her husband's an Azkaban being a Death Eater.
Yeah.
So Mm-hmm. No love lost.
Yep. Yeah, and Madam Malkin, again, is trying to be so neutral and just wants to get them out of the shop, not even saying, oh, I'm so sorry that they offended right. your friend. Like, I'm so sorry about this and that. Like, because, again, Harry Potter's the fucking chosen one. And,
right.
So, you know, like, I am more scrutinizing of Madam Malkin's, like, attempts at neutrality here.
Yeah.
And I guess this is just coming from, again, for so long, for at least the last 5 years, if not the past decade, of politics becoming so divisive because, and it makes sense because the extremes have gotten so extreme, you know, it's gotten so extreme that, yeah, it's not even disagreeing with politics on, you know, like fucking tax policy. It's like to make your camp with someone is to, you know, be like, I sign off on all these horrible, horrible values.
Right. Yeah.
So, but anyway, so I'm a little, I'm much more judgy of Madam Malkin than I have ever been before.
It's okay. Different times.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that they wrap up with Madam Malkin and then they go to Fred and George's shop, Weasley Wizard Wheezes.
And it is bumping.
It is popping. The place is lit. And it's the only place that kind of...
the vibes are good.
It's the only place where that kind of exudes the energy that Diagon Alley is traditionally supposed to have.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because there's a little bit of like, they can have some, they have some kind of defense things there. Not that that's the whole selling point, but I'm sure it doesn't hurt.
And on the window is a sign kind of in the same formatting as the ministry stuff, but it's more like, why are you worrying about you-know-who? You should be worrying about you-know-poo, the constipation sensation that's gripping the nation.
Oh my God. This is where Fred and George lose me, because that's just not my sense of humor, but it's, I was like, okay, guys, you guys are crazy.
And Molly's like, they'll be murdered in their beds.
It's all right. I feel you, Mrs. Weasley.
So it's just, I won't go into again. The place is just lit. Let's just leave it at that.
I just wanted to comment, though, on which I thought this was a little bleak or a little dark. I know there's the game called Hangman, but then mm-hmm. they have like a legit toy that's a, what does it say? With it, where a gaggle of delighted 10-year-olds were watching a tiny wooden man slowly ascend the steps of the real set of gallows. I was like, let's just calm down here with that. But
reusable anyway. Hangman, spell it or he'll swing.
I know I've talked a million times about where my headspace was. So when I think about that, I just think about like, oh my gosh, that's pretty dark, but whatever.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
And because we know how fascinated you are with form methods of torture and execution. Oh.
Well, I spent so much time reading about those things. And so that's always where my mind goes. I mean, even, you know, to be quite honest, even before I wrote a paper on it, and that's why I wrote papers on it, is because I'm like, this is so dark. But anyway, apparently these kids are having a blast with, mm-hmm. you know, a horrible way to die, but whatever.
Yeah. And then Fred and George, you know, give Hermione a paste that will heal her eye.
Yeah, because they knew that the damage that the telescope.
Yeah, she's like, we needed to invest in a really good bruise maneuver because we're testing most of the products on ourselves.
Goodness. At least they're testing them, you know. She didn't mm-hmm. lose an eye, too, so mm-hmm. that's good.
Yep, and so, again, just lots of different candies, lots of different, just, again, there's just so, so much. And then, as you said, they have a sort of whole defense against the dark arts section where it originally formed as, you know, just watch your friend like hat and spell bounce off you because you're wearing a shield hat, but now the ministry ordered like 500.
And so
and then instant darkness powder imported from Peru, decoy detonators that can walk off and make a really loud noise, thus creating a diversion. So yeah, lots of good stuff.
Yeah, so Fred and George are doing very well. I mean, if they're having, you know, the ministry's buying things from them too,
And again, they don't promise, you know, complete protection, but they're creating things that are useful as opposed to those crappy scammers with the amulets.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then what do we've got? They tell Harry, you know, take whatever you want, no charge. And it's like, you are our investor, therefore you can take. And I don't like this, you know, because with Ron, they're like, you know, that's like 10 galleons, whatever. And he's like, I'm your brother. And that's our stuff you're nicking.
Right. Yeah.
Which, yes. Well, and but before that, we get Fred or George showing Hermione and Ginny the witches, the witches section, which is a bunch of like cosmetic and love potions and plenty of stuff.
Stuff for guaranteed girls.
10-second pimple vanisher, which is like, guys have acne too, man.
Exactly. And I don't know. This was pre like Patrick Starr and like all that stuff, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, and I won't go there, but.
Yep. And they're engaging in a little bit of sister slut shaming.
Yeah. What the hell, people?
And it's like, we're not giving any love potions to our sister. Aren't you got five boys on the go? Whatever you've heard from Ron is a big fat lie.
Jenny's fine. I think like they just need to lay off. And she's a cute girl. And I'm sure they're really going to flip out when Harry and her get together. Because I know it's going
to. Yep. And so, and then during all this, Ginny is really taken with the little like pygmy pups.
That sounds pretty cool.
She was pointing at a number of round balls of fluff in shades of pink and purple, all rolling around the bottom of a cage and emitting high-pitched squeaks. Oh, I guess I always, it doesn't exactly say if they're like mammal or whatever. I always pictured them as like birds. Like,
oh,
just
really?
I always pictured them as just tiny, completely spherical, like, their plumage, just little birds.
Little birds, that's fine. I thought of Furbies.
Oh, Furbies?
Yeah. Live Furbies.
Mm-hmm. But anyway. But to me, they were always birds. But so Ginny's like, Mom, can I have a pygmy puff? And this is when Harry, Ron, and Hermione look out the window and see Draco Malfoy is scurrying down the street and his mother is nowhere in sight.
Yeah. And he's headed into an interesting store.
Yes. So the Golden Trio being who they are, and Harry, like, wasn't his intention, but Dumbledore's told him, like, always have your invisibility cloak with you.
Right.
And so they don that old cloak and follow Draco.
Yeah.
To which we end up at a store we've been in the past.
Yeah, was this the very beginning or the second book? I can't remember.
Yeah, this was the very beginning of the second book where Harry misspoke in using the flu powder, and therefore instead of ending up in Diagon Alley, he ended up in Nocturne Alley. Yes. Specifically, he showed up in the fireplace of this store.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because I knew this was, I mean, I remember the kind of, there are some different shops in my area, and this room, I'm thinking about this as one of the shops. It kind of deals with a little bit of the darker side of things, I guess.
Yep. And so Draco's there talking to the shopkeeper, Borgin, and it's like, we can't hear him. And Ron, being resourceful, brings some extendable ears.
Yeah, because I remember they made those. Good job, Ron.
Yeah, they had, because Fred and George had invented those as early as the previous book.
Right.
And so what do you think of this very suspicious conversation between Draco and Borgin?
I mean, I don't know, because we don't really know where, I feel like, I would hope, the Ministry would kind of address some of the Death Eater havens. So, but, you know, just because it's dark doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. But Draco, we know his father is currently in Azkaban. So is he kind of serving as a drug mule for the Death Eaters? I couldn't think of a better example. I don't know what Mr. Borgin's allegiance is, but yeah, I wasn't really sure. I thought we'll get to the Golden Trio's attempt to kind of understand, but I really don't know what to think. And it was very vague in the clues that we got. Like, I felt like we didn't really get anything.
Yeah. So ultimately, it seems what we can glean is Malfoy wants something fixed. He's not in a position to, like, bring this thing to Borgen and is wanting Borgen to relay the instructions to him. And he's also kind of threatening Borgen's, like, no, perhaps this will make you more confident. And Harry and Ron and Hermione don't know what what exactly followed that.
Can I venture to guess?
What do you think?
Somebody's wand, but I don't remember who's... Well, Ron's wand was destroyed in the last book. I don't think that would be his. Anybody. That's my guess.
Yeah.
I'll...
A wand, like a different, like someone's, like a some sort of wand.
Like maybe one of the, you know, Death Eater's wands. I'm trying to think of that duel we had in the last book and like who lost what. I don't know if that was always pointed out, but that's going to be my guess for now. He wants somebody to fix a wand. I know he's not Ollivander, but still.
Yeah. So, yeah, whatever he showed, Borgen is looking like really scared. Tell anyone and there will be retribution. You know Fenrir Greyback, he's a family friend. He'll be dropping in from time to time to make sure you're giving the problem your full attention.
This kid and his freaking swag, like goodness, he's a pill.
And another important point of, you know, and don't forget to keep that one safe. I'll need it. Perhaps you'd like to take it now. No, of course I wouldn't, you stupid looted man. How would I look carrying that down the street? Just don't sell it. So, thoughts?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, a wand isn't, like, too obvious, but unless it's, like, a weird wand that people, like, if it's made out of this certain sort of thing, that's very obvious. I don't know.
Well, wands can be connected via, like, Harry and Voldemort's wands.
Right.
You know, maybe it's a pair of two brothers that has like the same unicorn hair or heartstring from the same dragon or.
Yeah, I don't know. To be continued. But yeah. And, you know, the Golden Tree would do a bang up job of trying to figure out what's going on.
And I was just surprised because, again, Hermione is so hit and miss in these sort of situations because, again, she's typically the planner. But when it came to last book in terms of getting rid of Umbridge.
Yeah.
She was able to react to that and exactly play into what Umbridge wanted to hear.
Right.
You know, even though, you know, there are other complications that she didn't think about with the centaurs and, you know, white savior stuff and, you know, not thinking about those implications. But, but in terms of thinking on her feet, that was one she did, which was very, very successful.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, just Hermione just totally botches it.
Yeah. Which I was surprised. I was surprised too. I mean, like you said, she's more of a planner, but I didn't expect her to be this kind of bumbling fool. Kind of, it was weird. So she must be really rattled. My only kind of assessment is all this stuff must really be getting to her.
Yeah, all I can think of is that she had a year to like observe Umbridge and know what Umbridge's motives were.
That's
to be able to, you know, she knew her like quote unquote subject or a. You know, of her con, a quote unquote victim better.
Right.
Whereas this, she's just walking in totally blindly. She doesn't know what Borgen's disposition is. Borgen's not, like, obviously not a good guy, but at the same time, he's not really thrilled that he's having to help Malfoy in this way.
Right. So, yeah, she's. So
Borgen is very much a wild card, and it seems that really throws Hermione off.
Yeah, because she doesn't really know what hand or what kind of what to play to. So
yeah, and like if anything, I think she was trying to play on, you know, being a ditzy woman, and
which doesn't work for her.
Which it doesn't work for, not necessarily doesn't work for, or just specifically doesn't work with Borgen. Which, if I'm honest, that's kind of surprising that a sleazy guy that wouldn't work on.
Yeah. Maybe he's like not into ladies or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway. Ah, well, said Ron, but worth a try, but you were a bit obvious. Well, next time you can show me how it's done, Master of Mystery. And thus they returned to Weasley Wizard Weezes, swearing up and down that they had never left the shop and that they'd been in the back room and all along, and she simply could not have looked properly.
You know what that is? Gaslighting. They were gaslighting Mrs. Weasley. It's not nice. That was horrible.
Alrighty then, and thus concludes our two chapters. So the plot thickens a little.
A little.
Draco being assigned some sort of task and needing things fixed, and one isn't in the shop, but one is. What's
friendly wands? I don't know. Man, Ugh. We'll find out.
We will. And thus we go to our first exercise, Gothic Geek Out. Which I think is pretty obvious, unless you're being really creative. I was not.
I mean, I think as we were running that down, I had one that I think we're going to agree on. But I initially went with the attacks, the Death Eater attacks. But I didn't even like that one, so it's Nocturne Alley. I mean,
of course, yeah. Because and this is when we first came into this shop of Borgen and Burkes, you know. And we're introduced to Nocturne Alley. I think I described Nocturne Alley as being very the sort of urban Gothic of the 19th century of like Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
And, you know, those sort of like grimy, dirty workhouses and streets and just, you know, all these like shopkeepers and like, you know, overseers or corrupt, like, you know, Borgen and, you know.
You're reminding me, I was listening to a podcast today. Podcast is called Morbid, and they were, I was listening to their series on Jack the Ripper. So that's the kind of vibe I get in Nocturne Alley.
Which I went through a little bit of a phase. But I've grown bored with the Jack the Ripper series.
It doesn't do it for me. I mean, to me, it's so obvious he was a surgeon of some sort, but I don't know. I'll listen to it when there's nothing else.
Yeah, it's, again, I don't even remember the nature of each woman. Like, and then there's even the sort of sense of even the theory that it wasn't even the same person, that they were sensationalizing it by, is there any super consistency that really, really points, or was it just bloodbath?
I listened to it while I'm at work, so I'm kind of half in and half out. And with Jack the Ripper, I feel like the theories are all over the place. My favorite Jack the Ripper theory is that he was H.H. Holmes, the guy, the devil in the White City, because the kind of killing stopped when H.H. Holmes was in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, there's so many theories, and I feel like you could go so many different ways with it. I just got to the point where they're talking about the letters that he sent. I don't know. I mean, obviously psycho or psychos, plural.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
My favorite, not that I believe it, but my favorite one that came out is Jack the Ripper was C.S. Lewis.
Oh, what? I've never heard that one.
You've never heard that one before?
No.
Because, you know, obviously he was on drugs doing something when he wrote... Alice in Wonderland. So
oh my
just,
gosh.
But
I'm not a Ripper person. Either. Some people get really into it. I don't care that much. I'm Salem Witch Trials is my Jack the Ripper. So,
sure. I haven't. Oh, and they finally, like the last one, they finally like fully officially pardoned 396 years later or some crazy.
Ridiculous. I had never heard of that woman that they pardoned her in May and they cleared. I don't know. We're trying to figure that out.
Well, but I'm just, if that's like a thing, like why, if that's a thing that people do like officially post-mortis, like why wasn't it done like sooner? I guess I'm just wondering like if that is a thing that people do in terms of like officially, like, you know, like when the Pope and the church says, oh, we're sorry for the way we treated Galileo and like things like that. Like, just why didn't it happen sooner if this is a thing that we officially do?
I don't know, because like 300 and some years is a long time. And it was like some middle school kids that led the charge for this. So she was a woman forgotten. I don't think she had family. So I guess there wasn't a family to kind of pursue it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know a lot about the pardons, you know, kind of early on or later on. And I know it was part of history that a lot of people wanted to forget. So that could have been part of it. And anyway, I will not go on about the Salem witch trials on this podcast, even though I would love to. But Nocturne Alley, very Ripper Dixon-esque vibe there. Dickens-esque.
And it's funny that Kevin, like, the shop is called Borgin and Burks, and Kevin always likes to inflate it as Bath and Body Burks, or like Bath Burks and Beyond. That's Ben cute. Burks, like, it's hilarious.
I love it.
All right, then we move on to Tarot of the Day, which the tarot card that I picked up at random is the King of Cups.
King of Cups.
May or may not have pulled this in the past, but the King of Cups represents mastery over the realms of emotion. Screw you, you stupid ad. I want to read the article. Rules over the realm of emotion, creativity, and the unconscious. When this card turns up in a tarot reading, you have gained control of your feelings and can accept them without allowing them to get the better of you. Even when life throws you a curveball, you can draw on your emotional maturity and stability to help you navigate these challenges. You don't let things get to you and you steer clear of drama, instead choosing an emotionally balanced and calm approach. So what does this make me think of? This makes me think of the very fabulous and compassionate Arthur Weasley.
Oh, okay. Tell me more.
Just that he is, you know, it's always been, again, and it's kind of sexist that it's always portrayed, at least from Harry's perspective, of when it comes to the Weasley parents, Molly is bad cop and Arthur is good cop.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But it is also, I think, coming from a place that I think was true with the dynamic of my parents, where my mom would freak out about things and my dad just didn't freak out in the same way, or at least not, like, he had substantially less triggers. And so he was more like, let's fix the problem and we can blame whoever started the problem, like, later.
Mm, yeah.
You know, just more like results driven.
Yeah.
In that regard. And I think Arthur is like that in a lot of ways. He's just not willing to be rattled by everyday things.
Yeah.
And so he's just very like, and again, even, you know, obviously it rattles him when, like, his fight with his son Percy and how Percy, like, throws shade at him, but ultimately, despite, you know, his socioeconomic challenges, he seems pretty secure with himself.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I mean, I'm just reflecting on Arthur Weasley. He does seem, yeah, he's never kind of shied away from things, and he is, I mean, he's confident in his love from his wife too and his kids, which is nice. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, what did you think of
the King of Cups? Mm-hmm. I was thinking, for some reason, Tonks came to mind. And I mean, she is definitely in her emotions right now, but so I feel like that would have been a reversal reading of the King of Cups. Maybe I'm not that familiar.
Well, it's the antithesis of what, you know, no throwing shades at Cancers, but she's very much in her feels, but not, but not in like the Jedi way. I acknowledge them and I release them. She's very much in like the Cancer Tempest right now.
Wallow and, you know, just swim in it. Yeah. I mean, no shade, it's just truth. So,
she's kind of being the antithesis of that. Yes. And, yes. You know, cause in the tarot, the cups are associated with the element of water, and water a lot of times is associated with emotions, and emotions can be very tempestuous, but at least in the King of Cups, it's showing the more serene aspect of water and just being like, being very chill. Let's see. King of Cups embodies the perfect balance between the executive and the heart. Not only are you able to assess and manage a situation logically, but you can also draw upon your intuition and understanding of human interactions. As a leader, you care as much about achieving your goals and objectives as you do about making sure everyone is happy and engaged. Because the King of Cups is supposed to represent like the very like structured, quote unquote, protective masculine energy, but in a way that is much more feminine because of the use of emotion. So it's not coldly logic like the King of Swords or super fiery and in your face like the King of Wands, but rather it's a very, you know, serene form of, and probably a more healthy form of masculinity.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think you nailed it with Arthur Weasley. I mean, that seems like he seems the embodiment of the King of Cups.
Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else that comes to mind. Cause again, cause with the, obviously with the King, Queen, Page, like those specifically tend to represent people and yeah. figures more so than abstract ideas.
Yeah.
So yeah. So I immediately go for a person, but I'm trying to think, is there anything else that cousin, I'm just trying to think Diagon Alley. In a lot of ways, Hagrid sometimes can be a King of Cups in terms mm-hmm. of being a caring about his feelings, but also being like the strong man. But quite frankly, I think most of the time, Hagrid is more on the cancer,
yeah.
just, you know, melting down.
In his emotions, making decisions based in that rather than logic and reason. It is a very hard struggle for us cancers to sit there and go, is this what's really happening or is this what's in my emotions? So I've only now at 39 years into my life have I figured out that's what I need to do. So, goodness.
Alrighty then.
Emotions,
they're hard.
They are.
Emotions, you know, soon we'll get to a point where all of the artificial intelligent robots will be in like, why'd you do this to us? Emotions are hard.
Yeah, I feel them. I feel them.
Yeah, and they finally fired that Google software engineer who is claiming now that one of their AI, you know, one of their like robots is sentient.
Oh, geez. I didn't know.
You haven't been following
that? No.
They had put him on leave, whether it was paid or not. But yeah, he was basically claiming that this thing is sentient now. And now they fired him. So I don't know if that's true or not. It's not so much a question of whether it's truly sentient, but if it's able to parrot things to the point that it's acting in a way that is like it has the same competency as like a normal person being adversarial, then it doesn't matter exactly what's going on
right.
in its head. It's still responding in all the ways that we still have to deal with all its actions.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry, didn't mean to get off on
that's
that.
No, that's fine. I like a robot tangent. That's good.
Yeah. So the next, pulling the card for my Black Moon astrology cards, the card I picked was the, you know, of the houses, and I got the 11th house.
Hmm.
Which is supposed to be, according to this, the sort of realm of friends.
Oh, it's an easy one then.
So the three graces of hope, faith, and charity, the bonds of friendship, rely upon support from friends and other associations. Don't attempt to go it alone. You will need help. The 11th house is all about associations and how we connect to others. It is the house of group alliances, ideals, and our aspirations in a public or social arena. This 11th house is commonly referred to as the house of friends, but is so much more than that. It has everything to do with the collective that comes from groups, people who identify and align with each other to make social change. By combining our energies with others, we can make our world, but more importantly, the domain of others, a better place. So I first think of Harry, you know, taking Dumbledore's advice of confiding in Ron and Hermione, the prophecy, and, yeah. you know, saying, like, you'll need your friends, Harry, like, you do them a disservice by, you know, trying to keep this away from them.
Yeah, that's a hard lesson to learn sometimes, you know, when especially I think when you've had, Harry has had the kind of upbringing and lack of confidants, you know, he grew up in the Dursley household, I mean, like, mm-hmm. it care about anything about him, so it's taken him several books to learn mm-hmm. that lesson that he can trust Ron and Hermione, but
yeah. And then just friendships and stuff, I think what Fred and George are doing, you know, for the you know, both for themselves and, you know, leaning on each other for support and be able to be so successful in this business venture, but I think they're doing a lot for the community at this, you know, at this dangerous time in bringing people together via laughter with distractions and then things that are also even possibly useful.
Yeah. Yeah. They are the, you know, the shows and music and books we all indulged in during, you know, the beginning of the pandemic when nobody knew we were all terrified. So, that's what they're kind of serving for their community.
Yeah. So what did you think of?
I think that the 11th house with friends specifically, you know, I thought about the friendship between the Golden Trio, obviously, I feel like. And then the animosity, I think I'm guess I'm on the flip side of things tonight, but was thinking about Malfoy. And
mm-hmm. Like you're thinking of all the like anti-examples.
I know. I'm like reading, I'm doing the, it's opposite day for me. But yeah, so and how like a much of a horrible example of friendship and how he's kind of, I mean, he has his like Crab and Goyle, but they're not, they're no Golden Trio. I mean, there's no parallel, you know, that would be.
And also if you want to go anti-example of, you know, Harry leaning into his friends, whereas Draco's disassociating, he physically does not have his father and he's pushing his mother away.
Yeah. Yeah. And his friends are more like minions. They're not.
Yeah,
like
they're really more friends. Minions. Although sorry, I was thinking of Draco with like the little yellow despicable minions.
As soon as I said that, I was like, that's what I thought of too. So.
Becky Romica?
I've never seen one of those movies.
You never saw Despicable Me?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
I wouldn't, again, like the typical when it's really successful and they're just cash grabbing with various sequels and stuff. The first one, and even the second one, is very good. I would recommend it. Even my dad loves it.
Okay, I'll have to give it a shot. I'm sure I probably have somebody I could watch it with. So,
mm-hmm. So anyway, so yeah, that is the 11th house. Good stuff.
11th house.
And now we move on to our final exercise. Fan fiction time. Looking at, what are you looking at, Gibbous?
I'm looking at my note card here where I'm taking notes that are my notes are. No, I wish I was looking at Gibbous. He ran off. Mine, I'm always so self-conscious of mine. What if Ron, Harry, and Hermione all got the same scores on the OWLs? Like they all placed, in my thought was like, what if they all did the same level of work as Hermione? They were all.
Oh, if they all were so badass. The sad thing is that I think Ron is capable of being all those things. He just doesn't apply himself because he's taking the position that, you know, obviously Fred and George went off the rails, chose to do their own thing, but he's had already so many brothers so far do the, like, you know, straight A's and stuff. And so to him, he doesn't perceive that he would get any validation from that because it's like, oh, it's, you know, his brothers have already done that. So he doesn't apply himself. So yeah, that just makes me think of if he had actually really applied himself, I think being able to structure, again, just the means to an end of, you know, yes, I'm doing something the same as my brothers, but having all these OWLs means I could pursue a career, again, not the same as my brothers, but I could have more options and be able to, you know, create my own identity, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's being very, I think Ron is being very short-sighted in not implying himself. And, you know, I dealt with some feelings of trying to separate my identity from my sister's, particularly in terms of academic interest. And, you know, it was the sense of, yeah, it's just like I so desperately want to be someone different, but that did not translate to my sister was good in school and therefore I'll be bad in school. And it's like, I'll still be good in school and do different things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's, yeah. And I, my kind of thought with it was, you know, not only are they capable, but how Hermione would react. Because I feel like it's kind of her, you know, Ron is always kind of feels like the low man in the mm-hmm. friend group. And if Hermione would react poorly, like, I just don't know if she has the level of maturity yet to be like excited or see that it as a good thing. I feel like it's kind of her little crown still.
Yeah. Yeah, she would. I definitely see, like, even depending on how debatable how well she would be able to hide it. But at the very least, emotionally, what's going on in her head, I think you're right. I think she would be the type that, but this is my thing. If this is also Ron and Harry's things, then what am I? Or who am I?
Right.
You know, so, and then if Harry got all the, you know, things, then he would be like, yeah, I can be an Auror now, even though I still have to deal with Snape.
Right. Yeah. What was yours? Mine was...
Again, I was going through all this, you know, psychoanalysis with Ron, which, because Mon also, I, again, really struck by, you know, they tell Harry, you know, take what you want. And again, it is true, he directly, like, you know, invested in them. But again, Ron is Harry's best friend, Ron is their right. brother, and the fact that they say, you know, put that stuff away or unless you're going to pay for it. Like, just general wider, what if, not just in this one instance, but what if Fred and George had just been nicer to Ron?
Well, you know what? They should be nicer to Ron, because the whole reason Harry even did that, like, when you were talking about that earlier, I was thinking the whole reason Harry did that to support him is because Ron and Harry are friends. Like, if Ron and Harry hadn't been friends, no joke shop, you know?
Yeah, so, like, because they're of the same family.
Right. So give freaking Ron a break, man.
Like, yes. And again, I've gone on the record many times saying that I think Fred and George, not intentionally, obviously, but they're very joking and sometimes, you know, demeaning approach towards Ron has really damaged his, you know, self-esteem, and they're the brothers that are the closest to him in age.
Right.
And so constantly being beat down like that, even though they're trying to do it in a joking manner, but because Ron is so fragile, he can't take it. And so he has all these emotional senses, problems and sense of inadequacies. And a lot of times it comes out being really shitty to Hermione a lot of the time.
Yeah, true.
And again, just the sense of, you know, the typical, I hate the, you know, the typical guy, teenager or adult, who is so insecure with himself. And so the one way to make himself feel better is be like, okay, at least there's this one class of people, women, who I will always be better than, no matter how mediocre I am.
Yeah.
And therefore caving into a lot of, like, sexist stuff.
Yeah. It's a real cute trait.
I usually prescribe that sort of mentality and that sort of line of thinking to Theon Greyjoy in Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, cause especially when you read the book and get his internal, like, dialogue. So, but yeah, I think that has a lot to do with, you know, he did not have a brother close enough to him age that was, like, a comforting, supportive figure. Right. I think the closest one is, like, Bill, but Bill is so old and just not around and has his own job and his own life.
Right, yeah, and the age difference is significant, especially at those ages. It's not...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, anyway, that was just mine, because I just feel... Again, because I love the twins so much, but I just, as I get older, I get, like, you didn't have to be this shitty to Ron.
Right, yeah, you could have been a friend, especially since you have a successful joke shop because your silly brother was friends with Harry Potter, so...
Yep. Alrighty then, and that concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time and we will go over chapters 7 and 8, which is The Slug Club and Snape Victorious.
What? Alright.
Like, I'm curious what you'll think of, like, what does that title mean?
I myself am glad I can read these now. So, yeah.
Did you know the title? Did you see the titles beforehand?
No, I hadn't looked yet. So,
yeah. Okay. Yes. Interesting. Alrighty then. Catch you guys later. Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.